So I introduce Wenzer Nosey.
First of all, I just want to thank Reverend Barber, Reverend Liz, for having this opportunity. And the reason why I say the opportunity is because I believe we have never been ever at the table when it comes to the discussion of religion in this country. And as you can see, over 500 years, it's been a long time. And I'm very grateful. I think one of the biggest mistakes ever made in this country was trying to define in the English language, you know, what our religion was, but then again, blast us with names that, you know, took us away from what religion was and really outcast us into somebody that we were not and caused, you know, great fear in this country of who we were as we were pagans or, you know, ones without a God and didn't know what we were doing. A lot of this didn't make any sense to us because, you know, we felt like our religion is no different than any other, but anybody else's religion from across the country, I mean, and across the world. But anyway, I just really want to give thanks and also to our Creator for giving, I think, the world an opportunity now, giving the world a path, a journey that we all must follow. I tell my children that it's no different than anything that you do. You have to modify and readjust to be able to reach the needs of, you know, what's happening around you. And I think in life, it's no different. You know, we have to adjust. And times in life, it gives us that opportunity to do that. And where we feel is that we're in that time where an adjustment has to be made, which is really, really crucial to every one of us. And to us, that's the spiritual journey that must take place because we're all in one pot. I guess, you know, for me, I would say in the very beginning, forgive me. I apologize because the things I'm going to say is not to hurt anyone or to step on anyone's feet. But I think what I'm going to say is what should have been told in the very beginning before anyone ever stepped foot on this part of the world. In the Indian belief, you know, we have four sacred mounds. But then in the beginning, that makes reference to the way the Mother Earth sits. And they talk about night and day. And at that time, because we had the daylight and night would come, we knew people were on the other side of the world. But because of the way it was structured, there was no really communication of how people travel today. But in that time, our people talk about a person, there's a jokester. He's a person that's a gambler. And in that time, you know, he had already came here. And in that given time, the people here were very religious to the way creation is, the way the world was created. And so what we say is that through the spiritual belief and the spiritual power of that time, the people were able to gather and they say it in a way that they shot an arrow and it nicked him. And so he knew at that time that he could not conquer on this side of the world. And so his last words to the people on this side of the world was to turn back and, you know, sarcastically say to us, "I will be back," and laugh. And so in this process, what we have learned is that from the English side of things is that we knew him as a jokester, you know, a conniver, you know, everything that's related to that. But what we have learned is that he's what you guys call Lucifer. He has already been here, the person who deceived and, you know, will gamble. And so he had threatened the people here on this side of the world that he will be back. And this is why earlier what I said to you, that we don't hate white people or anybody who's here. It's the thing that you brought. So in this 500 years, you know, we have set back trying to define who this evil is. Who is this person that now has come here to this side of the world to destroy exactly what he did on the other side of the world? And so now it's here. And so what's really important for us as Native people is that we're able to stick a face to that so that people can know who you're dealing with. You have to know who you're dealing with. And that's why it's so important for, as I said before, the Native people come to the table, because you need us to understand what is happening here today. Because that is the first chapter of how America was created, from deceiving the people, deceiving you. And so, like I tell the younger people, is that when we talk about decolonize, you know, it's not just us. It's everybody has to become decolonized and understand the concepts that you live in, to understand what is those forces that are keeping you where you're at. That's why earlier I mentioned that when I had the opportunity to cover this country and visit so many different denominations, races, and my last words to my people back home was that I don't think these people that call these places towns and cities, that they understand they're living like us on reservations. Because they're limited, you know, from what they are taught, from what they are told, and what they are shown. And then the propaganda, as far as to keep you in those places, continue strongly, and then we embrace that. Because one of the things that we see that has happened here is that you are no different than I am in having huge families. But when you're living in a corporate world, it starts to dwindle your family to where there's only a few, but yet there's many of you because of what it does to you. And so there's a total disconnect that happens to the family. Then you lose the family base. You lose that rooted base. So it's like a mirage. It's there, then it disappears. Because it's not concreted into the Mother Earth, Mother. You know, we don't pray to the Earth as its God. We pray to it as though it's a part of us. It's our Mother who cares for us. Just like how you would pray or care for your mother, your sister. No different. And then we understand that we have to live with these things. We are intertwined together. There's no way we can live without each other. And so when you go back to the beginning of time, like I tell people, is that if we go back to the beginning, there's a lot of connections that we have. A lot of connections. Because at that time, we understood what God's creations were and the purpose for those things. So as we say, you know, when the newcomers came, it's like you take a pond, a steadle pond, and you drop a pebble, and then the first rings are created, the second rings are created, a third. Well, what we say is that the first ring was a deception. That was the lie of this country. And then as it ringed out, more rings started to form. But every other ring came under that deception. And so it's really important that we go back to the first chapter of how these places were founded. Because you can go back to your cities, your towns, and your government, and they always talk about the founding fathers. Well, they're talking about stockholders. They're talking about people who control the country. And then they educate their children. And then it's installing their children to keep away from people like us. Because we come with a different mind, which should be the journey of the spirit of life and the giver of life and our purpose to help maintain what God created. But it disconnects us from that. And when that happens, then they're winning the battle. And so when all this is happening and we're listening and we're learning and we're following, and we sit back and we say, you know, in their language, he's this person they call Lucifer, you know, who has many names, because it's playing with every one of us. And I think, you know, for me, that's one of the things that's really important of why we need to be at the table, why we need to be involved in this transition that's going to take place, in this new social way, this new religious way. It's a gift from God. It's already been there. It didn't go anywhere. We're the ones that detached ourselves from it, and we have to come back to it. Because if we're going to save anything, that's really what's left. It comes back to us individually. That's why I told you the first healing comes back to looking at ourselves. Because the greatest gift God gave you is your body, you know, is you. in what you do in your teaching, your mind, your heart, your soul, reaching out there. You know, that's what's so, so important. So I think that, you know, being here today, you know, being here tonight and being with you is a time that's been long awaited. Over 500 years suffering of our people. And I guess I would kind of end with this, and I know we're going to be talking more, but my mother used to tell me, she used to say, you know, son, at one time they were supposed to annihilate us from the face of the earth, because the federal policy was to exterminate all of us. And 90% of our people in America got exterminated. Only 10%, this is what is here today, 10% from that time. And what she told me, she says, you know, son, when that, she's talking about the first wave, did all this deceptions, but it was the second and third wave, and she's making a reference to children, that they said, this is wrong. This is wrong, what we're doing to the first people. So she says, so son, we're in a time now that you have to go find those people, because those people had children like themselves and should have taught them the right words of God. So you have to find them now, because they're out there. And if they all come together, then we definitely are going to save what's left. But most importantly, our children. Because if we don't teach our children any of these things, then we're not doing what we should be doing. Because the tomorrow is our children. And if we can teach our children what they should know, then they're going to teach their children. And then the world will change. So it's sad. We're all dirty already because we've touched this corporate way. But we have to recognize it so that we can begin to limit ourselves and then begin to look for true healing. And so, you know, those things are really important and as we move forward, as the way we see it. Because we're all in this together. We're fighting something great. And that's why when we come here or when we leave, we pray for all of you. Because we say to ourselves, like, who doesn't know who they're fighting evil? You know, by fighting these fights and standing for these issues, like it's told to us, it's coming 2, 3, 4 times strong against you to keep you from being a part of the healing. Because if it comes after you, then we lose you in the battle. And that's why it's so important that we keep on the spiritual trail.
That's right.
Because if we keep that spiritual trail, we have gone further than any of the ones before us. But we have to appreciate what they went through. Because now we're in that time where we need to understand. There's no excuse for us to not understand. It's time that we all work together. And that's why I'm so grateful that I can sit at the table tonight. And I know in the very beginning when I met Reverend Barber in D.C., you know, that's when I made that, when I said that now there is hope. Mm-hmm. I do feel hope for the first time to see my granddaughter stand with me and hear the moral commitment of the Poor People's Campaign, that these are the issues and we need to address. And so I know with Indian Country, you have us, if that's the rope. And that has to be the rope, because we're fighting something greater than us. That's but right. We have to understand it. And if we do, then we finally put a face to that evil. And now, because it's recognized, it goes backwards. And that's how we say the mother, Nagosan, will begin the healing. And it will heal, because now the people are back to what they should be. So again, you know, just for my opening remarks, I really want to thank you for the opportunity for listening, at least giving me the opportunity to listen to the way we were brought up and what we see and what we feel and what we worry about when we look at you, because you've been in it longer than we have. And all we're trying to do is tell you what we see. It's not for you to get offended by it, but it's for you to see the road you're on, because we're going down that road too. And we have to catch ourselves and say, whoa, wait a minute, this is not the road that it was intended to be.
That's right.
So I'll leave you there.
That's right. Because that means then I don't believe the gospel I preach. And that is that there is redemption possible, right? I might struggle against them, but it's because I love them so deeply that I have to stand up to them. I can't be angry in the sense that my Apache brothers have taught me that hooks me to evil. And I can't look at them and say they're just unredeemable. Because I'm a human being too. And every now and then I'm going to get a scratch from the evil one. Does that mean I'm unredeemable?
No.
Hey, be careful in this moment of cynicism. Even those of you who live in the city and you got a hotel in this city and a name on it, be careful that you do not allow another person, even if he's the president, to drive you to a point of pure hate against them. Fight what they're doing, challenge what they're doing, but the biblical witness would say, don't let them drive you to that point.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, Brother Wenzler, I wanted to continue a little bit both on this connection between systemic racism, white supremacy, and this nationalism, but particularly to really both recognize, you know, how you opened us up, that for 500 years, your religion has not been seen as religion. And yet, the struggle that you're waging at Oak Flat, at Mount Graham, amongst the people, is one about religious freedom. And so I was wondering if you could just speak more to that reality, to the struggle that you're engaged in for religious freedom as a religious freedom struggle, as a struggle, you know, against that supremacy, against that nationalism, and for truth and you know, keeping on this spiritual trail.
I really believe in the beginning, when a child is born, because it's done to every one of us, that when a child is born, that the Creator God, who's known throughout the world by many names, has already placed an essence in you to know already when it's wrong or when it's right. And so during the time before the transition here in America took place, the people, as we were told, were very spiritually strong. They spiritually knew how everything was intertwined and how everything was connected. And I think the way, when I look back, is those important things that were installed in us, rather it be our songs, rather it be from our behavior, our characteristics, we held to it when this transition of racism came into our way of life. And I think the other part of it was that to be able to recognize what this colonization was. And then I think another big part was how the Bible was used against our people.
That's right.
And we can go back during the time when one of the federal policies was to make us, to Christianize us. And on the reservation in the late 1800s, there was an incident that took place because the strategy wasn't taking course and they were upset. And so this was one band of Apaches and another one here. They caused a turmoil between the two. But in that federal policy, what it was that those who ran to the church and those that ran to the sacred mound, those who ran to their sacred ways, their holy ways, go ahead and eliminate them. But those who ran to the church, you know, when they come to you, the soldiers will come and hold the Bible up and say that these are the children of God. And so that's how people began to, you know, some began to convert into that, because it wasn't so much what the Bible was saying. It was the strategy from the federal government, from the government, the military. And so people witnessed that. They didn't forget, you know, they didn't forget, to where it continued to pass on into children. So it wasn't so much who taught it, it was how it was used. And so that's how it really affected in the very beginning. But the only thing that people could hang on to what was originally the religion of this land. And, you know, for some people, I explained to them, like when they talk about Mount Sinai, these holy places are no different than that. For what actually you speak of is the same thing we speak of. And when we say our holy or sacred people, you know, in Apache, we call them Gon. But in the definition of the English, they gave them the word of crown dancers or devil dancers. The reason why they gave them the word crown was because they do have like a somewhat of a crown that they wear. And then if you ask the question, what does it do? You know, and as best as they're trying to explain back in the 1800s, was, you know, they ward off evil. So, oh, they're devil dancers. So this English word really demised and really watered down the religion of our people. And when in reference that we give today, you know, they may have a picture or they may have a statue and there's a halo. Well, the right words for these, for us, if they want to use the English words, is they were halos. These were angels you're killing. These are the angels you're destroying. No different than the ones you pray to, the ones you talk about. No difference. And so it was really overwhelmed, if you can really think of a people that were being killed. 90% were being killed, exiled out of their homelands, but then they held on to it because it was important, because that was what made us who we are, tied to the world and the greatest gift that God gave the world. And so so, you know, I go back and I just, you know, sit and imagine what our people had gone through and how a lot of it had went underground because people were killed for it and were exiled out of Arizona if they continued, you know, to teach. And so there was a really, you know, and I don't think America know what the military did at that time to really go after the Indian people. And so it went underground and it didn't resurface until around 1945, you know, but people were still being punished for it all the way up to the 1970s. So it wasn't until the 1970s before our religious practice really surfaced. And then the next steps now that we're facing is going back to our holy places where these gifts from God originated from. And so, you know, it's something, you know, and we give a lot of gratitude to our women, because it was the women who held on to the religion, because it was the men that were being killed. The men were, because they figure if you take away the father, then how is the young man going to grow? And that was one of the federal policies against Native people. So a lot of our men were eliminated so that the teaching won't continue. But if it wasn't for our women being quiet and quietly teaching, you know, we would never, we won't be where we are today, you know. But it really went underground and it came back to surface again. You know, I have to go back to the fact that, you know, we've seen all these things happening. And in Arizona, you know, and only speaking of Arizona, but then speaking for the entire nation, is that where I come from is, it's the last place of America, meaning that this was the last place that the United States took over. So we are new and old, meaning we're old to the old ways, and we're new in this transition. That's why we see these things and we can speak of it, you know. And I'm glad you're listening, because, you know, what has happened in Arizona is what happened here in the East Coast.
Sure, sure.
You know, it migrated all the way. And so among the Indian tribes, we are the last. And that's why we're reaching out to all our tribal brothers and sisters out there to bring some of these things back because of that transition that took away. So the atrocities that we went through, they went through it prior, you know, 300 years before us, you know, as America was transforming itself, North America. But anyway, it goes back to just the fact that, you know, it was the identity. And that's why my daughter speaks of, is that we cannot lose our identity. You know, and that's why I tell my daughter, I said, what's so scary, I said, is that I hope we never get to the day that maybe 20 years from today, one of our kids will say to us, what country did I come from? You know, and especially with our holy places being destroyed. So that's why identity is really, really important for all of us, because that's what connects us to the mother, the earth.
And just your thoughts, and that will be a blessing.
In speaking to people, there's really like two, as I was saying earlier, there's really like two categories to understand. And the first one I want to attack is the political arena. Never assume like what you hear out there is really what's taking place. I always know that there's something in the back room taking place. In Mount Graham, known as Jishin Cha Se'an, also a home of the spirits, the angels, the deities. In this particular project in 1988, it had to do with telescopes. And I think a lot of you are hearing about Mauna Kea, what's happening there with Native people trying to keep telescopes off their holy mound. Well, here in Arizona, there was a proposal for 32 telescopes to be built on this mound, a holy mound. And so little did we know who was really involved. And we took a trip, actually here to New York. We came here. We flew into New York. And it was all anonymous. We didn't know who we were meeting. We just knew that we were fighting for our holy mound. And we got an invitation to come here and have an opportunity to speak about the holy place. So we get off the plane, where they take us to the hotel. They tell us to change our clothing, get ready. And so we go somewhere here, and I'd never been to New York at that time, and we come to this really nice place, and I remember walking into the building, and we were dressed not like the way that people were dressed. And it was very rich people. But I just remember all the eyes on us and the stare downs that were taking place. So we were like, well, we're supposed to meet somebody here, you know. But nobody walked up to us. We were in there for about an hour. And finally the person that was driving the vehicle comes back in. And he tells me, Mr. Nosey, it's time to leave. Mm. So we were, what? So anyway, we get back into the vehicle he had, and on our way back to the hotel, he tells us, it's time to pack your stuff. You're flying back to Arizona. And I said, wait a minute. I said, we just got here. And he goes, I know. He goes, you guys just did your job. He says, now it's time to get back in your plane and get back to Arizona quick. And he said, we'll call you and tell you more when you get back to Arizona, because we're concerned about your safety. So here we are back in the plane. I mean, got here early in the morning, and then we're back in the plane, the red eye, back to Arizona. So I get to Arizona, and we're, you know, kind of feel used. We were used. And anyway, the call was made, and I'm speaking to somebody I never spoke of. And he told me, he says, Mr. Nosey, he said, it's time to learn. He said, America is not what America is. He said, there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And he says, let me tell you, he said, the activity you went to was sponsored by the military. And the United States Congress, or the United States, is involved with the telescope project. Because, as you know, Arizona, the Tucson area, is one that is very strong with their satellites and also with their lasers. He said, there's a war right now going on to who's going to control the world. And he said, there's already satellites set up to where lasers were going to be used through the satellite to hit other countries. And he said, but by you being there, you just expose that the Native people will fight for their holy and sacred place. So he said, we just got word that the military Air Force is pulling out of the project. So he said, congratulations. Mm-hmm. He said, you're probably going to see a slowdown. And sure enough, from 32 telescopes, it dropped to 13, and it dropped to 3. And so we're able to keep off the telescopes off our holy mount. But the point is that it was a military decision, a military project.
That's right.
That was going to take place. But yet every university, everybody in this country, were really excited for telescopes and that what it was going to bring in education and all, you know, the revenue and all that. And the University of Arizona was exempt from all federal laws. Same thing that's happening at Oak Flats today. And so now we're dealing with Resolution Copper, Rio Tinto, who again, a foreign country company, was exempt from all federal laws that you and I, as an Americans, have to abide by. And yet 75% of the minerals are leaving this country. And what's really hypocritical is the fact that you listen to the news and, you know, from the president to Congress, and you hear about their dislikes with China, their dislikes with Iran, and you know, you hear all these things going on. But what's so crazy right now, and it has not changed, is that 75% of the minerals is leaving this country. Mm. And the two big buyers they have is China and Iran.
Yeah. Mama.
And I'm like, propaganda to the people of this country. I mean, lying to their own people.
Mm-hmm.
Making you believe in a system that doesn't exist, you know, so we're all living in some kind of being hallucinated in this way of life that we call American. And yet there's other agendas.
That's right.
And when it came down to Oak Flats, another big reason John McCain was very interested in the area was because it was supposed to leave a big cavity and they were going to place the nuclear waste in this mountain and in this holy place. And with Arizona having one of the biggest underground water was going to be contaminated. And not only that, like with what my daughter shared with Barbara and the UN today, was the minerals that they found that is for military weapons. And yet, you know, they put out to this country, you know, revenue, jobs, money,
right.
You know, make this country better, stronger. And yet, you know, you got 75% leaving. And, you know, we say, Atunwaka. You know, why did God put us on this land, you know, in this particular land to where we have to protect? And when you come down to understanding the Mother Earth, they're all interconnected underneath. There's a purpose. We only tend to look at the top. We don't look underneath. And if we could just go down and look underneath, we'll see how much we've destroyed there too. And we have to be able to come back underneath and understand how everything's intertwined, like I said before. And so on the political sense, you know, as I was saying earlier, that how we've adopted this governmental way, but we're the security of that. We should be protecting those interests. We should hold our congressional people liable for these stuff and then ask the right questions. A lot of these people, and, you know, I've walked the hall of Congress for over 30 years. And to me, I come home and I finally can tell the Indian people back home saying, man, I should be Congress. These guys don't care for these guys do not care for this country.
Mm-mm.
They do not care. Because if they do care for this country, then they would protect it the way it should be protected. And I said, and that's one of the things that's really disturbing, and that's where we're really deceived. Because they don't look at this place as home. You know, they don't look at this place of where it belongs to the next generation and the next generation and how we should maintain this. And so, you know, in the political world, this is what we face. And we all have a say. Everybody in this country has a say. And that's why I said it's very important to make your voice be heard and to have your congressional leadership, you know, support these two bills because, I mean, the bill in the House and the Senate. Because these bills represents the ugliness of this country. You will find everything in this bill that relates to you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if we allow this to happen, then the precedence has been set for the future.
That's right.
But if we argue to this point, you know, and we fight this fight, then, and by a miracle, because like we say right now, it's a miracle we're looking for, that it stops. And this will be a moral victory for every one of us.
That's right.
A spiritual victory for every one of us, keeping the blessed gift alive that God created the world.
That's right.
And this is all of us. Or either we're going to stand by and be a witness of a murder and a killing taking place.
Mm.
So I tell my daughter two things. I said, yes. I said, your dad is there protecting the land. I said, protecting it and also praying that there's a miracle that takes place and this land is saved. I said, but you know what, daughter? I said, the second part of that is the worst part of it. I said, this tells me that people don't know what a killing of an earth is. They don't know what a murder is.
That's right.
I said, so somebody's got to teach this country what they're murdering and what they're losing. I said, because now in the religious way, I said, that's our job to educate the people of killing an animal, killing the trees, killing water. I said, because there's going to be no tomorrow without that. We cannot survive without any of those things. And then so I speak to a lot of people, and they tell me, in God's way, and even in Jesus' way, it's intertwined. We all have responsibility to take care of these precious gifts. Mm-hmm. But who segregated it? I mean, they're the same people who segregated us.
Yes. Right,
it's their history of how they segregated. And they continue to teach our kids. You know, so we have to wake up and say no more. Because in our Apache way, you're no different than me. You're my sister. You're my brothers. And when the first people came into our region, that's how they were identified. Anhi nikide, that's your relative. You know, we have no words for hate. You were relatives of ours. But we just didn't know what the first wave of people were looking for. So it makes us wonder that from the first people who came here, who transferred their assets to the next generation, next generation, next generation, next generation, which we live among today of, is that do they still follow their instructions? Keep everyone divided? Keep everyone separate? Because now we're their biggest fear because we bring truth. You know, we bring honesty and we bring a new beginning. You know, we're their biggest fear because they hold on to that ugliness. And that's why I'm saying it's so important that we come together so that the narrative can change.
That's right.
With real, in your words, like the gospel, the preaching. In our way, the words, of the blessed gift of life.
That's right.
Because they're all one. They're one and the same. And so we're at that crucial point. So when you look at it from a political, position, you see all the ugliness of politics. You see all the ugliness of what is done to all of us. But then when you look at the religious site of it, this holy place is no different than Mount Sinai and all those places talk about in Europe, no different. It's the same God. You don't even have to travel to Europe. You can be here and be a witness to what is God's creation and what is God's words. Mm. And this is why, we have come out, begin to take that road of spirituality and why, we sit here tonight, because it's important for all of us. It's important for all your children and our children. And it's important for tomorrow, but with all God's creations. I mean, that's where we are at. And then now even our people tell us that if these people don't listen, then the mother's going to do what it has to do, like all mothers. And that means that we got to prepare. And those who believe in God, those who believe, will be the one to know where to go when that time comes. So even that, we're now preparing ourselves because we don't know. But we have to pray for that miracle. We have to pray. And that just takes, like what we're doing tonight. It's already started. It's not too late to get in. But the more we can get in together, the bigger difference we're going to make. But like I said, in those two arenas, from the political to the religious, we can do something. I mean, that, and I got to end with, that's kind of the crazy thing, is that it's so simple. Mm-hmm. It's just simple. It's not even a complicated, discussion or anything, but what makes it complicated is what divides us.
That's right.
And that's where I started in the beginning, is that trickster, that Lucifer, has already come here, but said he would be back. He's back. And that's what we got to wake up to. Because if there's any last spiritual arrow, it's by all of us. Mm. Not one of us or one race or anybody. It's all of us. So it's all of us holding it, targeting it, and letting it fly. Wow. And that's the spirit if we are going to have a tomorrow. So anyway, I just wanted to end with those two. That, the religious side of it is so important. So thank you. We do have on our webpage where donations can be made. As I was saying earlier, the deadline with the land transfer is going to be in July, so we really got to move publicly, but financially as well too. We're reaching out in every which way to make sure that the appeals are taking place. Court hearings are set up. Visits to D.C. to speak to our congressional leaders. So whatever you can do, be grateful. We're real grateful to it. But as Liz said, the struggle's there, the fight's there, and really the deadline to this whole thing
is July that the United States Congress will sign over, officially sign over the land to Rio Tinto. So, but again, you know, as I said earlier, the prayers and also reaching out to congressional leaders is a must. And I will be in D.C. Tuesday, so any calls that you guys can make, you know, they'll know I'm there, and it'll be really a big plus, you being constituents to your congressional leaders and you being heard is really going to make an impact. So as my daughter was saying, Bernie Sanders is in the House, and Raul Grijalva is, I mean, I'm sorry, in the Senate, and Raul Grijalva is in the House. So those are the two bills, the Save Oak Flat. Thank you.
That's right.